sensitive to discourse. It can only be millennial. And now here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello, and welcome back to Millennial X. I am here now with Antidem. Now, Antidem is a stalwart of Millennial. I think this might be your fifth or sixth appearance on it. And he's someone that I've known for a long time. And he hosted me in America when I visited. He was the person who met me off the plane when I first landed. And he's also the person who introduced me to the Zoom H2N microphone, for which I'm extremely grateful because it served me very well through to last millennial. And this millennial is the first one that I'm not doing with that microphone. So thank you, Antidem, for that incredible technical tip. And welcome back to Millennial Now.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure that this really is the real Millennial Woes. I'm going to have to give you the Scotsman test.
Oh, what's that?
Repeat the following phrase. Purple burglar alarm.
Fuck off. Purple burglar alarm.
Well, now, does that mean you're not... Does that mean that you are no true Scotsman?
I don't know. I should have said it already. I do expect this to be a more laid-back stream. Antidem is a very conversational kind of guy. I always think of him as like an American talk show host from the 50s or the 60s or something. He's got a very distinctive voice and a sort of manner. So everyone get comfy. This isn't going to be a sort of fast-paced conversation, but we will try to get through various topics in our own leisurely time.
They can't every single one of them be Sturm und Drang and, you know, the end of the world. Sometimes you gotta have a little fun.
Yes, I agree. Well, do you want to introduce yourself briefly to anyone, just for anyone who doesn't know you and isn't familiar with your previous appearances?
Yes, so I am the artist formerly known as Antidem. That was my branding for about 10 years, longer, I think, but somewhere around maybe the beginning of the Trump administration or maybe 2020, that whole branding, that whole way I was writing just kind of ran out of gas. It was very, if you read any of my old Antidem pieces, and they're still up, antidem.wordpress.com. I'm not going to take them down or anything. I'll leave them there until WordPress decides to yeet them. They were very mold buggy. They were long, they were complicated, they were dense, and they went into a lot of sort of the neo-reactionary stuff. It's not that I don't believe any of it anymore, but I've sort of gone my own direction. And I think that's happened to a lot of movements on the right. I think what happened to neo-reaction is what happened to the Ron Paul movement, which is its best ideas got absorbed into the larger right and everything else has kind of fallen away. So I kind of didn't write for a good few years until some things happened in my life. So I turned 50. Last year, and started having some pretty serious health problems. They were really bad, and for a while they got to the point where I, other than like a grocery run and a doctor's appointment, I basically couldn't leave the house. I was essentially housebound for a good few months. And one of the things that did is it really made me take my faith even more seriously than I had before. And a lot came out of that, taking my faith more seriously. My doctor essentially told me that most of my health issues could be traced back to my weight and my lifestyle. And he essentially gave me the talk of, you better clean that up or else. Or else what? And essentially said, or else you can count on a heart attack or a stroke in the next few years. So I did. He actually, believe it or not, he actually even offered me a prescription for Ozempic. He wanted to get me on that. And I thought about it and I said, no, I'm going to do this the hard way. So I started dieting, exercising, lifestyle different, all of that good stuff. And at least before Thanksgiving, I had lost about 100 pounds in a year.
Bloody hell.
Yep. And my target is to lose even more. And again, I did that the hard way without any Ozempic. And I had, during the time that I had had those health problems, I got very depressed. I started drinking way too much. And part of my cleanup of my lifestyle has been drastically reduce the amount of alcohol I'm taking. In fact, I've sworn off hard liquor. I'm still going to allow myself beer and wine here and there. But, you know, as my dad once said, it's pretty hard to be an alcoholic just on beer. So, you know, and I don't drink it all that much, although I've got one in front of me right now, just because of the special occasion. I've got a Sierra Nevada Atomic Torpedo IPA, and I think that will be quite nice. But one thing go ahead.
Oh, that sounds quite hardcore. What was that full name again?
Sierra Nevada Atomic Torpedo IPA.
Sounds like a missile.
But, you know, I decided not just to clean up my life in
right. Auntie Dem, could you speak closer to the microphone? Because you keep going in and out.
Okay. I decided to start doing more with my life, more things. And I've done all sorts, you know, I've started all sorts of stuff. I started up a ham radio class. I started a gamer group. And one thing that came to me is, oh, by the way, did I mention that I am co-founder of a small publishing company?
No, you didn't.
Yes, I am starting up a small publishing company, the goal of which will be to publish authors that can't break into the New York publishing system. Basically, people would be canceled out of it. So there's that.
Very good.
Thank you. And decided to get back into writing. But I looked at it and I decided, you know, my old style of writing, the old things I used to write about are just, you know, they're gone past. So a fresh start. I'm not disavowing any of my old stuff. Like I said, it's still up for anyone to read. But I'm rebranding as Anno Domini Now, a take on Apocalypse Now. And started up, Twitter. I'm on Substack. That's where you're going to find the Anno Domini stuff. So I like the new stuff. I like the new style. It's much shorter. It's much easier to read. And part of what occurred to me with that is it's a good read on a phone. You know, you can whip out your phone and, you know, on the bus or the tram or whatever, do a little 10-minute read and that's it. And I think anything longer is just going to be too much. So go and check it out. It's annodomininow.substack.com and it's annodomininow on what used to be Twitter.
Yes, that is one thing I'll say for your articles on Substack is that they are very short, they're concise. Again, not like mine. My essays tend to be quite a work to write, but also to read, I imagine. Whereas yours are nice, bite-sized sort of things.
I'm convinced sometimes you can't buck the system. You remember when the internet used to be full of forums?
Oh, yeah. I really miss them.
I do, too. They were a format that encouraged long-form, intelligent discussion of an issue. And they're gone. And I think really the big reason why is no one could ever figure out how to make them work well or look nice on a smartphone. I think that's the future.
Maybe. I don't know, actually. I've never heard that before. But then I've never heard any theory as to why they disappeared. I guess people said that they got replaced by live, like real-time chat, which, yeah, like on Skype and then Telegram and Discord. But we definitely lost something. I mean, it's a format that worked very well for a lot of different topics, and I think it's a shame. And a forum used to have a particular atmosphere as well. It was a whole thing, which a phase that has passed very quickly in the history of the internet.
Two things I really miss a lot are forums and IRC.
What was IRC? I don't think I ever actually got into that.
To give you an idea, basically Discord is what's replaced it. So right. If you just a sort of real-time chat like that, and it used to be really rolling. A lot of channels were open 24/7. You go in there, there's still people talking away. And, you know, Discord's all right. But there's not as many. The busy servers are all vapid, and the interesting servers tend to be a little slower, although there's a few that I'm on that I really like. I'm on Nerdrotic's server. Under a different name, so you won't find me there. Everybody has the screen name that they use for their dissident stuff and then the screen name they use for personal. I'm on Nerdrotic server. I just opened up the wrong app.
See, some people would classify Nerdrotic as dissident, but...
He is in his own way. I'm on Linus Tech Tips. DEI Detected. That's a good one. By the way, DEI Detected got started up by a guy named Cabrutus down in Brazil, who basically published a list of all of the gaming companies that had hired DEI consultants so you can know to stay away from their games. And that's quite a good service.
A valuable public service.
Did you see the trailer for War of the Rohirrim, that animated Lord of the Rings?
No, I haven't heard about that, in fact. I've heard about the Amazon Rings of Power, and I even watched one of the episodes. No, I haven't heard about an animated thing.
Oh, it's basically the main character is a Mary Sue girl boss, which, of course, Professor Tolkien would never have written. Never.
The main character in the Amazon series.
Yeah. We're at the point right now where you could stick a pipe into Professor Tolkien's grave, hook it up to a generator, and power London by how fast he's spinning in it.
Yes, I think so. It's really disgusting what they've done. I think we probably talked about, well, if not you, then certainly other people must have talked about Rings of Power last millennial. I watched the first two episodes, definitely watched the first one episode, and just to see what it was like, just to see how bad it was. It's just shite, absolute shite.
By the way, interesting story from the set of the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings movies. Apparently there was some point on set where Jackson had made some little change to dialogue or something. And Christopher Lee walks up to him and says, "Peter, Tolkien would never have done that." "Well, gee, Chris, how do you know?" "Because he told me." Turns out Christopher Lee knew Tolkien personally.
Ah, yes, I think I've heard this. He was acquainted. Because the thing, of course, Christopher Lee was old even then. And he went back a long way. I think Tolkien died, was it in the early 70s or the late 60s or something?
September 2nd, 1973.
Right.
So he and I shared the planet for about 2 weeks.
Well.
By the way, another quick story about Lee. At some point, there was a scene in Lord of the Rings where I think it's in Nazgul or something, sneaks up behind someone and kills them with a knife.
I think you told this story.
Oh, last. Yeah. Did I?
I think you did, where Christopher Lee said a man doesn't make that sound when he dies.
Yeah. And Jackson was like, Well, gee, Chris, how do you know? Well, it turns out Christopher Lee was British Special Forces in World War II. So how did he know? Well, you know.
Amazing. He was quite a guy. Quite a guy.
By the way, can I tell a quick third story about him? I promise this will be fast.
Yes.
So at one point in the 60s, there's a movie theater somewhere in England that's showing a marathon of Bugs Bunny cartoons. And there's these two middle-aged gentlemen in there who are just screaming, laughing so loud that the manager tells one of the ushers to go in and kick them out of there. So the usher goes down there, comes back and says, I can't kick them out of the theater. Why? Because they're Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
That is rather amusing, because they were so serious. Well, that's amazing. Is that true? Is that one of these anecdotes?
As far as I know, it's true, and I wouldn't doubt it either.
Mm. I know that they got on very, very well. Mm-hmm. There are all these interviews and bits of footage of them, and they seem to be having a whale of a time. I don't know if you saw Academic Agent's History of Hammer Horror.
I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Right, okay. It's actually very good, very informative. You see, Hammer is something that I've only just dipped into. I've seen a few of them, maybe three or four of them. I don't know. Probably not more than that. And I did like it, but I've never sort of taken it upon myself to watch the whole oeuvre. Although I don't even think that's possible, because they're, as he detailed in that video, they're actually quite difficult to get, which is crazy. Because a lot of them are obscure now. But it is a delightful thing. I mean, are you into Hammer Horror?
I've seen a few of them, and the few that I've seen, I actually really like.
Yeah, they're very solidly made, and they've got a certain character that is pretty much unique to them. Although there were other companies, I think Tigon was one of them, and there was another one that Amicus, that made similar films. But yeah, Hammer is interesting. I'd like to take it upon myself to watch more of those and check it out, as it were.
You know, there's a style of British film that just doesn't exist anymore.
Tell me about it.
Like,
there's multiple styles of British film that don't exist anymore.
What was that company that did comedies back in the 50s?
Ealing,
yeah. There's nothing like an Ealing movie anymore. You know, you couldn't even do that style of humor anymore. Not because it's even politically incorrect, because nobody would get it.
And also the acting, the style of acting necessary to do it is just no longer taught. I mean, that's a big deal as well. No one ever seems to realize that even if you were to set out to do this, you couldn't do it. You couldn't replicate it, because the actors wouldn't know what to do. They wouldn't know how to do it.
Yeah, you couldn't find a writer, you couldn't find a director, you couldn't find actors, you know. And, of course, there's a style of British TV show that doesn't exist anymore. I mean,
are you really sure you want to get me started on this? I mean, I could really rant about this.
You know, let's go down this path a little. Like, you couldn't make The Sweeney anymore.
No.
You know, or even Life on Mars. You couldn't do that anymore, and that was 20 years ago.
Mm.
You know, any of the comedies. You couldn't do Only Fools and Horses anymore. You couldn't do Steptoe and Son anymore. And the science fiction shows, Blake Seven.
No,
you know.
No. I mean, and not just for reasons of political correctness, but just, as I say, the actors wouldn't be able to perform in that way anymore, I don't think. They'd be mumbling. They'd be trying to do it naturalistically. It would just be... would not be, it simply wouldn't be the same.
Yeah. You know, and British culture has changed so much, I don't think people could appreciate it. Or a lot of people could, but not, obviously a large chunk of the current population of Britain couldn't.
No. It's got nothing to do with them. Even something as relatively recent as, you know, 1970s cinema would be alien to them. It shows us Britain that they have no connection to.
Oh, by the way, speaking of all of that, guess who I went to see in concert about a month ago?
Morrissey.
I did. Oh, he's great.
Right, okay.
Oh, he's great. He's still got it. He really does. And you know.
Did he do This Charming Man?
Yes. Oh, man.
And how soon is now?
Come on. How could you not?
Right. Okay. I wondered. Because those are the only two Smith songs that I know, actually, off the top of my head.
Oh, really? I figured you'd be more into 80s British mope rock.
Not the Smiths, because it's just so depressing. I can't really... I mean, I prefer electronic stuff anyway, but the Smiths is just so depressing.
Yeah,
I can't really... It's too much for me. I'm too sensitive to this stuff. It gets me down. So I tend not to. Someone has just said in the live chat on Twitter... because I do get the Twitter messages. They get sent through to StreamYard, which is very good. I'm watching Against the Crowd, the series from 1975 at the moment. I'm aware of that series, but I've only seen the episode Murrain that I talked about the other night about the witch. I wasn't aware that the rest of the series was available. Alan Bastard, MP. So if you could tell me how you're seeing it, I'd be quite curious, because I really do want to see the other episodes of that.
Oh, speaking of the chat, just to answer a question, I'm watching the Rumble chat. So any of you who say anything in there, I'm seeing it.
Okay, good, good. I think we've got people watching the Odyssey chat. So it's a strange thing to be doing this, all these different platforms. I know I keep saying that, and I'll probably say it again, but it is quite a different experience.
By the way, speaking of changing British culture... Right. I'm going to tell you a little bit of my past. So my grandmother was a war bride during World War II, and she was a genuine Cockney straight out of Woolwich. And so, you know, from what I understand, if you walk around Woolwich now, the Cockneys are all but extinct. That whole culture, that entire culture of my grandmother is just gone. And I can't tell you how upset that makes me. You know, I have a long history in with Britain there. By the way, my great-grandfather was a World War I veteran in the British Army. He was gassed at the front, but survived. He came home and joined the fire brigade and was in the fire brigade in Woolwich in 1940 and was killed when a burning building collapsed on him. So my grandmother, she, somewhere around 1944, went to a dance on an American 8th Air Force base and rather took a fancy to the clarinet player in the band. And that was my grandfather. And they got married in 1945, came back home, had my mother, and then she had me. So, and you want to know one of the things about that story? I've checked into it. It would be basically impossible for me to immigrate into the UK with that history. And yet, seems like anybody on the subcontinent or in the Middle East who wants to can just cruise right on in.
Yeah.
And that also upsets me very badly.
Yeah, it's mental. And I think other Americans and New Worlders feel the same way, that it's sort of baffling that, you know, some Nigerian or Congolese can just show up on the shore, literally. Whereas for a white person to emigrate, to move here, it would be, well, let's just say much more difficult indeed.
Yeah.
But again, it's so perverse that it's something that certainly has not happened by accident. I think it's deliberately made difficult. Because white people, they respect the rules. That's the thing. They're worried about getting a fine or a prison sentence or whatever. So, but those same penalties are not exacted upon you know, a refugee who just shows up. And even an illegal migrant, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
So it's a very different experience. And so you have this crazy injustice where white people from the New World are discouraged from exploring their roots. It's really sick.
Okay, just a couple questions from the chat, if you don't mind me going through them. Justin Vestal asks, do you think Americans of our persuasion should look at America as a failed English project and turn our efforts toward the preservation of the homeland, Britain? You know, as much as it might be better for Britain to have immigrants of our persuasion instead of the South Asian persuasion, I don't think 150 white Americans moving to Britain would work all that well. And besides, no, I don't think that. It really varies by where you're at, where you are. As with Britain, primarily the cities are fucked, and that's why I left them. Get out into the countryside, and things are a lot better. So, you know, no, I don't think we should do that. No. And Born to Goon, thank you for the compliment. So, sorry. Don't mean to dominate things. Back to you.
No, it's okay. I mean, this is the fourth stream tonight, so I'm quite happy to take it easy.
The thing is, a lot of people in Europe think that we Americans are unworldly, that we have these weird ideas about what Europe is like. The truth is, most of our ideas of what Europe is like aren't wrong. They're outdated because we get the family stories passed down to us from our grandparents, our great grandparents, and all of that. So, you know, in my family stories, Ireland is still basically exactly the same as it was, you know, when my grandmother, great grandmother, left it in 1909.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's actually true internally to Britain as well. So my grandfather came from Lincolnshire, and specifically a town called Spilsby. And I've heard him, you know, he's been dead for a long time, but I heard him talking about Spilsby. I heard stories from his childhood and so on. But the dreadful thing is that if I were to visit Spilsby now, I wouldn't find the world that he knew. I would find probably a duplicate of every other town in England with, shitty villa vape stores and betting shops and kebab shops and all that. That's probably what I would find there. I mean, I don't want to do it down. For all I know, Spilsby is a nice picturesque village, but I'm pretty sure that what I would find would be very disappointing compared to what he knew in the 1930s.
You can't go home again.
Yes, yes. That's a terrible truth. I interrupted you when you were talking about Americans and their understanding of Europe.
Yeah, it's just, you know, we think that the old country is like, it's still like it is in Grandpa's stories, and it's not. I am very happy that I got to go see Ireland, and the other branch of my family is Irish. I'm very happy I got to go see it around 2005, 2006, 2007, before it really started going woke. But I understand it's really awful now. And I don't think I'd want to see it like that. You know, especially Dublin. Jeez.
Well, I was in Dublin. I've only been there once, and it was in 20... No, have I been twice? I was there in 2017. And yes, that's right. I was only there once. It was in 2017. And it was nice. It reminded me of Edinburgh. It felt like a remix of Edinburgh. So the architecture was of a similar style, but the buildings were all different and the streets were all different. So it was like the same city, but rearranged. Obviously, it was not exactly the same as Edinburgh, but, you know, still, it was reminiscent. And at that point, it was it wasn't that bad. I mean, I wasn't horrified by it, but of course that's 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So, God knows what it's like now.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to see Britain, not before Tony Blair, but not long after, again, before things got really bad. And I'm glad I got to do that too. Because, you know what? Europe's
it's changed a lot in the last 10 years. I mean, even Edinburgh. It's really over the last 10 years that it's changed, I think, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I live in a town of about 15,000 people that is the seat of a rural county, and we're even starting to see some noticeable immigration around here. Although my county is still about 90% white, or the city, the town, the county is about 95% white, and the town is about 90%. So, you know, all right, I still fit in.
Well, that gets us to one of the topics that you mentioned that you'd like to talk about, which is Trump. You are quite pessimistic about Trump and his second presidency, aren't you?
Let me put it this way. Even back in 2016, I came to Trump with much lower, much more limited expectations of what he would be able to accomplish. And I have to say, in his first term, he met all of my low expectations. Is Trump going to be able to make America great again? No, not a chance. The problem isn't one person. It's the system. And the system is so far gone that nobody is going to be able to save it. I think in a sense, Trump may be more like America's Gorbachev. You know, Gorbachev tried doing some reforms to save the Soviet system, and it was just too little too late. Just like Gorbachev couldn't make the Soviet Union great again, I don't think Trump's going to make America great again. Now, I'm still happy he got elected, because if nothing else, this gives us about a four-year breather to get ready for what's coming next. And I strongly suggest everyone get ready for it. And I don't just mean in the U.S., because once America has to retreat from Europe, and it will have to eventually, I don't know if that'll be next year or in 10 years, but it's not going to be that long. Things are sure going to change. I think a lot of Eastern Europe is going to have to make their deal with Russia. I think a lot of Asia is going to have to make their deal with China. I think, you know, what is a country like Britain or Italy going to do once the American presence is gone? You know, it changes everything. And we've got to start thinking forward to that.
Do you think that Trump wants America to be, I mean, he obviously wants it to be wealthy, but there's always been this assumption, certainly in our lifetimes, that America being very wealthy is sort of intrinsically linked to America being the world policeman. And it seems that he wants it to be very wealthy, but not for it to be the world policeman. But, well, what do you think about that?
There's a few things. Look, first, a lot of America's wealth is based on the dollar being the world reserve currency. And the BRICS nations are starting to pull away from that. Now, Trump says he's going to put 100% tariff on goods from any BRICS nation that pulls away from the dollar. Well, that's not going to do anything. Look, Russia already can't sell anything in the U.S. due to all the sanctions over the years, and especially since the Ukraine war broke out. So they don't care about a tariff. As for China, I'm sure it's probably similar in Britain. Go to any shop that sells anything in the U.S. Look at how much of the stuff on the shelves is made in China. We are not going to put 100% tariff on Chinese-made goods. It would crash the American economy in a week. So, I mean, that's a bluff. And I don't know that there's really much that he can do to stop the pull away other than to have America start acting sanely again, which may bring some people back on board, because pulling away from the dollar is a real pain. It won't be easy. It won't be painless. It won't be quick. So I'm sure most of the BRICS nations would rather not do it if they could avoid it. But if America keeps acting crazy, they're going to have to.
Would you say that Biden, I mean, obviously Biden isn't in charge, he's senile and all that, but nonetheless, under him, America has made silly mistakes, missteps, such that Trump is able to say, I'll correct this, I'll correct the course. Is it not very odd that Biden and his administration have been so incompetent and useless?
Yeah, you know.
I mean, it's almost as if they were trying to destroy America.
Look, say what you will about Barack Obama. He never did crazy shit like starting the Ukraine war. You know, he was relatively sane. This stuff is just crazy. And you know, they just let the crazies out of the closet on the rainbow flag stuff, on the wars, on everything. And I think maybe part of it is, look, on the right, and especially the dissident right, we don't get any free ride out of the press, out of anything on the mainstream. Hold on, I got to take a sip of something. Been talking for too long.
Oh, I understand. We've only been going for 37 minutes, but it doesn't feel like that long.
As I said,
this is going to be a nice laid back stream. So this is what Anti-Dem is. I realized last year that this is what he does very well. So that's what we're doing here.
And again, I don't mind being the comedy relief. But
I didn't say that, and I didn't mean that.
No, I said that. But I don't mind it being a little. Again, we don't have to solve all the world's problems in this talk.
Good. That's a relief.
Where was I? What did you ask
about Biden and the apparent wish to harm America and harm its standing and harm its economy? I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's as if they wanted to destroy America.
Okay, so here's the thing. Since we do not get any kind of free ride, the right in general has gotten to be pretty good about keeping our crazies in the closet. And look, any movement has crazies at the fringe, but we've gotten to be pretty good at that. The left has never had any reason to keep their crazies on a leash. And that ended up at the point in the Biden government where the crazies took control. And that's kind of what I think happened. No one in the left knows how to say no to anyone else on the left. There are no brakes on this train. Now, if you see the right, sometimes we're a little too contentious with each other. Like, you know, okay, I like Fox Day, I read his stuff, but there are times when he goes after other people on the right, and I really think he shouldn't. I'd really rather that he not do that. You know, like his whole thing about Oliver Anthony and all of that. Oh, you know, so-and-so, such-and-such is a big phony and all that. You know, maybe discretion's the better part of valor with that. Now, that's not to say that some people on the right are beyond criticism. I think Nick Fuentes has, through a series of missteps, not just the Destiny thing, brought some very well-deserved criticism on himself. I think he's a good illustration of why, in general, and especially in big movements, you don't let 25-year-olds run them. Because there's no substitute for experience and maturity. And again, he has made a series of really baffling mistakes that have really, again, gotten him what I think is some well-deserved criticism. But again, we are pretty good at keeping the crazies in the closet.
Well, yeah. Yeah, sorry, I'm here. But that's also been part of the right's problem, that it is always what you call keeping the crazies in the closet. Some people would call cucking.
Okay, here's the thing. The old expression is no enemies on the right. But you know what? No enemies on the right doesn't mean no quality control on the right. And there are times when we just have to tell someone, yeah, sorry, no. And we do that very effectively. But again, the left just doesn't see any reason to.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing. They always placate their fringe. They don't lambast or disavow their fringe.
Yeah. For example, the mobile abortion van that showed up to the Democratic National Committee convention. Okay, here's the thing. Back in the 90s, Bill Clinton's position on abortion was safe, legal, and rare. Which, you know, he didn't like to see it, but hey, you know, sometimes someone gets in a bad spot and, you know. So, but the mobile abortion van being there at your convention is fucking crazy. And somebody should have come out there and tell them, you get this fucking thing out of here right now. But nobody did. And again, it was just another example of crazy. Oh, hold on. Someone has asked the anti-wig. I do not see what your question about Lynn Lithgow was. Could you repeat that, please? But yeah, they just can't do crazy control.
I don't remember a question about Lynn Lithgow.
I'm in the Rumble chat.
All right.
And the anti-wig mentioned something about a 1982, a local newspaper conducted a poll that showed 86% of the 10 to 11-year-olds they asked in Lynn Lithgow supported continuing corporal punishment in the schools.
Amazing. Right. Yeah, that was over just before I started school. I think it had been banned like 2 years before I started. So it was never there. It continued in the private schools in Scotland for about another 10 years, as far as I recall, but was probably never used during that time. It was just still allowed, technically. That's a whole diversion. We're on an interesting thing, so let's not get diverted onto that. You were talking about the left, and I agree. Like that abortion van, that should have just been, this is going to make us look dreadful. You're trivializing something that, like it or not, is very serious to a great number of people. So fuck off.
Yeah.
Get the fuck away from this convention.
And there's no...
Yeah, you know, you think it's common sense. Even it would dictate you'd have to react like that.
Yeah, there's a sense of this looks crazy. Like, you know, anytime someone shows up to a dissident right function with a Nazi flag, you know, if I was there, I'd be, get that fucking thing out of here.
Yes.
You know, I am not, you know, sorry to anyone who feels that way. I am not a sympathizer with the Third Reich at all. And I don't see any reason why we should be. Here's a fun fact for you. Adolf Hitler killed way, way more non-Jewish white people than he did Jews.
Yes, but let's not get into that. Because even if you are a supporter or an admirer of that regime, you should accept that the need to hide your power level, basically, because otherwise it's obviously just going to be used against you and against your movement.
And, you know, what is it, Patriot Front? You know, I look at that and I'm like, oh gosh, guys, whether or not you think that they are, as has been accused at them, of being feds, the branding is all wrong. It's just all wrong. You know,
which was the one, not Patriot, I think it wasn't Patriot Front, it was a different one where they were all dressed in the same way and they had a blood ritual where they'd cut their hand and mix the blood and all that. And I thought, who the fuck is going to get into this?
Well, okay, that's an old American Indian thing.
Yeah, but it's not an old American white thing.
I know. But
because the point still stands. No fucking sane person is going to get into that. They're going to think, "What the hell?"
Well, sure as hell not going to do it in an era where we understand bloodborne diseases a lot better than we used to.
Well, and indeed, but also just even without that, it's still like it's just cult-like behavior.
You know what? I know a few American Indians because there's a reservation not all that far from me. Even they don't do that anymore.
Well, okay. I obviously I realize that it has a history, but to do that now in this day and age, it's just what the hell? Can we not just be sane? And does it have to be this extreme? And what is gained from doing that as well? Why? How does it help us? I really do wish that people would hold that metric in their heads. That what do we gain, and what do we lose by doing this?
Okay, I'm going to go into something here. It's not just us; it's them. I have a few personal friends who are, as we call them now, LGBT people. In fact, I just had lunch with one today, and we were talking about this, and it's like, you know, it doesn't even help them. Becoming a political football has not made life better for them. Having everything about their life be a political controversy has not made things better. It's all a few loonies within their community who just have to go into the girls' bathroom or just have to do drag queen story hour, or, you know, just have to push for this law or that, or just have to get you banned off Twitter. It's like, you know what, guys? I have my political beliefs and my religious beliefs, but just personally, I'm never mean to gay people, except, of course, in a Call of Duty lobby. But, you call everybody the gamer word there.
Right, okay, go on. And
actually, I was talking to him about it today. He actually used the gamer word in a Call of Duty match and got a temporary ban because apparently they're using AI to detect the word. And as soon as he said it, they sent him a timeout. You converse with the gross? Yeah, well, get over it. Look, I lived in San Francisco, just outside San Francisco, for 25 years. All right. And look, there's a difference between your political life and your personal life. You know, you treat, treat people okay until you have a reason not to. Doesn't mean you have to give them everything they ever asked for. But, you know, again, don't be a jerk to people just for the sake of being a jerk to them. You know, that's on you, not them.
Yeah, so, I think that people can take this too much to heart. The sort of need to be ideologically consistent and pure and all that. Because obviously you have a real life to live. And this is what I was getting at. With that. I wish I could remember that group, the name. But I've got no reason to think that Patriot Front were feds, but I did think that this group were feds. It just looked like this is exactly what you would do if you wanted to make nationalism look fucking dreadful.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a tone deafness. And, you know, one thing that Trump got really right was what looks good to middle America? What message can you send out that they're actually going to like and resonate with? And by the way, this is what makes J.D. Vance a great pick. If you've never read his book, you really ought to.
Well, somebody, a previous guest on Millennial this evening was saying that J.D. Vance's book is full of anti-white rhetoric.
Ah, come on. You know, some people just are just too damn sensitive. You know what? Here's the thing. You know what the left does? The left walks around the planet looking for reasons to get offended. Let's not be like them. It's one of the things that pisses me off the most about them. It's one of the things that makes them most insufferable. Let's not do that. You know, all right, we roll with the punches a little bit. And I just did not pick that up at all. But again, look, if you're looking for something, you're going to find it.
I mean, I think people are quite hypersensitive about him because he's married to a brown woman and all that.
Yeah, we sure are getting a lot of East Indians into our political system. We've got him, we've got Vivek Ramaswamy, we've got Harmeet Dhillon, Nikki Haley, all of that. They sure are becoming prominent. J.D. Vance literally says he race mixed because he looks down on whites and Indians are better. I don't believe that. Sorry, I just don't. You know, I don't believe it. Now, look, if he said that he finds East Indian women attractive, fine. Guess what? I find Japanese women attractive. Doesn't mean I'm going to sell out my country. And also he trashes poor white people. No, he tells the truth. He tells some harsh truths about, you know, a section of the white community that's really dysfunctional. And I don't see what's wrong with telling the truth about that. Yeah, guess what? I live out in hillbilly country too. And a lot of the people out here are just wonderful. They are great Christians. They are great people. They'll give you the shirt off their back. But yeah, there are some very dysfunctional people out here. So, you know, again, I'm sorry. The fact that we're pro-white doesn't mean that, you know, white people are above any and all criticism that you could ever throw at them about anything, or that any group of them is. Sorry, we have our imperfections too. I don't mind being honest about them. And, you know, I once had someone, I think it was one of the TRS crew, say something like, I made some comment, I think maybe in their Discord server or something like that, about, you know, how we've made a lot of mistakes. That's how we got here. And no, we can't just point the finger at the Jews and say they did it. No, even if every charge against them is true, we let them do it. And, you know, he was like, no, we got to defend our ancestors. It disrespects them to say that. Well, you know what? Only a fool isn't honest with himself about his mistakes. Only a fool refuses to learn from them. Says, no, everything was perfect. No, it wasn't. And we've made a lot of mistakes. There's parts of our community that are very dysfunctional. And if we're not honest about it, if we don't say anything about it, then how are we going to get anything done about it? So, sorry, I just don't have any sympathy for that.
Understood. Well, that does lead on to something that you wanted to talk about, which was moving to, I don't know if you want to be specific about where you're living, but you said, I don't know whether to name it or not. Do you want to, you do it. You say as specific as you want to go.
Generally, I refer to it as Southern Appalachia.
Yes, yes, that's what I was not sure whether to say or not.
To give you an idea, today I made a quick trip out to Asheville and back. Well, it was supposed to be a quick trip. It ended up taking me 3.5 hours because of all the damage from the hurricane. And yeah, that was horrible. But anyhow, you were saying?
Well, you wanted to talk about your move to that area, because obviously you came from San Francisco, so it's a huge, huge change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. So here's the thing. I moved here 6 months before COVID hit. It was a very different experience, and boy, am I glad that I wasn't still in urban California when that happened. The stories I've heard from people who are still there are just horrendous.
Fuck, it must have been a nightmare there.
Thankfully, out here, there's much more of a, I won't say distrust of the government. Actually, yes, I will. And that goes back a long way. Goes back to the Civil War. Goes back to moonshining. You know, there's a lot to that. So it was nowhere near the amount of madness here, especially after, you know, the first couple of months. And I'm very happy for that. But yeah, it has been a big adjustment. But honestly, if you're out there, get out of the big cities. Nothing good can come of it. you know, I don't think it's going to get a lot better there. Justin Vestal asks two questions.
Sorry. I'm back. Sorry, there was a technical thing. My light fell.
Uh-oh.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Justin Vestal asked, things changed significantly after Obama's second win in 2012. Progressivism became more explicitly anti-white. Would I agree? Yeah, I would agree with that. He says, do they still sell cheap smokes out on the reservation? My local reservation, now, for those of you in Europe who don't know this, Indian reservations have a special legal status in the U.S. They are, for most purposes, considered essentially a foreign country. And on the reservation, the tribe sets the rules. They are exempt from both state and federal law. So you can do all kinds of crazy things on an Indian reservation that you can't do elsewhere. For example, my local reservation has a casino on it in a state where that is otherwise illegal. And my local reservation just legalized sale and use of recreational marijuana. So it ain't just smokes they're selling out there. You know, not that I have been down there and bought some and come back with them. That would be terrible. So don't ever do that. By the way, if you do that, stop for lunch at the casino. I recommend the Gordon Ramsay Burger Bar.
But you were going to talk about what you've seen in Southern Appalachia and the culture there and the people there.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, most of the white people here trace their heritage. They're Scots-Irish. So there's a lot of that. For example, country music is really just Scots-Irish traditional music with some American elements added in, or at least, you know, real traditional country. I found the people here generally to be quite warm and welcoming. They definitely have a huge skepticism of the federal government, though, and that's really important. One thing, though, that I have to put out there, this whole neo-paganism thing, look, believe what you want to believe in your own life, in your own home. What I'm going to tell you is, in the United States, that is hugely off-putting to the tens of millions of white, deeply Christian heritage Americans who we are going to need to be on our side if we're ever going to accomplish anything, whether that's, you know, politically or otherwise. I'm sorry, it would be the stupidest thing in the world to alienate them for the sake of a few thousand people who are allowed on social media. So, you know, I'm sorry, the neo-pagans are not worth the trouble. They just aren't. And, you know, we can't do that. In fact, any of the anti-Christian elements of the dissident right, I didn't say non-Christian, I said anti-Christian, they need to go. They're a huge liability, and we just can't have it. Again, folk first, we can talk religion later. No, I'm sorry, we can't. Not here. Not where I live. Because they are not going to be on your side unless you talk Jesus to them. So yeah, no, sorry. Maybe it'll work in Britain. Maybe it would work in Sweden. Maybe it would work someplace else. It ain't going to work here. So that's my little statement on that.
All right. Well, would you say it's still a are fairly traditional. I mean, I'm guessing it's not traditional as such. It's more that they've held on to this despite modernity.
Well, traditional, I mean, it kind of depends what you mean by that. American Protestantism is its own thing. It's always been, it's been a sort of a unique thing. And of course, this area is very, very Protestant. It's always kind of been its own thing. And I think pretty much they're doing what they always did, which would be probably, you know, to an Italian who thinks of traditional religion as being some huge, beautiful cathedral and priests in vestments with incense, it wouldn't seem very traditional. But around here, I think it pretty much is. Well, by the way, one thing that we have around here is there's a few of them. They call them cowboy church. And you go inside and there's literally like cowboys, guys in cowboy hats and all up giving the sermon and all that. I've always meant to go to one of their meetings. And in fact, you know what else I want to do? I want to go to an old style Southern tent revival with the preacher up on the stage. You
know. Right. It would be quite a novel experience.
By the way, I want to tell a little joke here. All right. You guys are going to like this one. Okay. So there's a black church down in the South, right? And one day the choir's singing and the preacher's preaching when all of a sudden, poof, there's this puff of red smoke, and right up on the altar is the devil himself. And he's up there, he's got the horns, he's got the red skin, he's got the cloven hooves, and he's like, rah! So everyone starts running for it. They're running out the door, they're diving out the windows, until finally, there's nobody in the church but the devil and this one old man sitting in the back, just sitting there. So finally, the devil walks right up to him. Hey, you, can you see okay? Why, yes, sir. Lord bless me with good eyesight, even at this age. And do you know who I am? Well, sir, now I don't think there's much mistake in that. And do you know I could kill you with just one little snap of my fingers? Well, sir, now I don't doubt that at all. Well, then how come you ain't scared of me? Well, sir, seeing as how I've been married to your sister these 53 years.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. One thing I wanted to ask you is, you said that there's a lot of skepticism about the federal government. Why? Where do you think that comes from?
A lot's left over from the Civil War. Those are wounds that had largely healed before the whole statue tearing down madness started. But there had still been that feeling around. And now that those wounds have been torn open, people have kind of gotten reminded of that. A lot of it goes back to moonshining too. For those of you not all that familiar with American history, all alcoholic beverages were banned in the United States for 13 years. It was called Prohibition, started in 1920, was repealed in 1933. During that time, a lot of people made moonshine, made illegal liquor, and would, you know, take it up to the big cities where they'd sell it to the mobsters, and the mobsters would distribute it in the cities. So basically, you had mostly northern revenue agents and federal police down here, you know, busting local, you know, rural southerners for the illegal booze, and that caused a lot of resentment to, I think the political situation now causes a lot of it. I think that there's if 9/11 happened today, there's a lot of people in the rural parts of the U.S. and especially the rural parts of the South who would not be quite as upset at that happening to New York and Washington as they were back then. There's an old story I heard about a B-29 crewman during World War II, and he had to bail out, and he got captured by the local Japanese in some small village not too far from Tokyo, and he found that they were actually cheering for the fact that Tokyo was on fire just on the other side of the mountain, because they hated the big city. And, you know, they were not sorry to see it go. Which, you know, I love Tokyo, so that's not how I feel.
All right. You see, I wondered if it was to do with, because there seems to be a general disdain in the North for the South, and yes, especially that, you know, the South, Southeast of the country. I was thinking of Deliverance, that kind of thing.
Many of the pieces of media that are made about the South are made by members of a certain tribe who do not have much actual experience being in the South and who absolutely hate it. I would recommend that you do not consume any media produced by members of that tribe, and I certainly recommend that you not consume any of that.
Yeah, although I don't know who, I can't remember who made Deliverance. I'm fairly sure it was, I'll have a look.
Hollywood, but, and the whole system is just, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a particularly nasty film, but a few of the people who were in it have died recently, actually. But it kept coming up in my thoughts. But that whole conception of the South, well, the Southeast, it seems to be something that some Americans, and I don't just mean of a certain tribe, I mean like the sort of WASPy upper class, what is now the more cosmopolitan upper middle class white Americans in the North, they seem to enjoy this notion that that area is just barbaric and the people are stupid and all the rest of it, because it's a source of, you know, a feeling of superiority for them.
Yeah, and you know what? If you are some snooty northerner who has that impression, you're absolutely right. It's terrible here. Please don't move here. Please stay in your big cities up in the north, and don't come down here. You'll absolutely hate it. And I've been lynched 3 times today, so, you know, you don't want that to happen to you, so please stay away.
All right, so let me see what else you wanted to talk about. Hurricane Helen.
Yeah, that came through here. And this ties into the whole, what is it like down here? So the hurricane hit the Big Bend in Florida. It turned north, and it hit western North Carolina, eastern Tennessee, really bad. I've driven through it. There are places where the flood came through, and on either side of the riverbank, for I'd say a good quarter mile, every tree is down. There are places that just got wrecked. A town I drove past today was under 3 feet of mud until recently. A friend of mine in another town, they've told him he's not going to have his electricity restored until sometime early next year. It was terrible. But the vast majority, did this place pull together. People literally donated so much stuff to the disaster relief that at some point they had to tell them to stop, because they couldn't store and distribute that much. People were, on a local Facebook group, is everyone okay? Who needs help? Where can I go? Where can I volunteer? And I did volunteer. I even wrote a little article about it. It was absolutely inspiring to see. At one point it came up, you know, why aren't some of the students back at the high school? Well, they were out at the airport helping to unload disaster supplies off of National Guard helicopters and put them on trucks. And I mean, like, most of the high school was there. So, I mean, that's That's tremendous, and that's the kind of thing that you will find out here. And yeah, just couldn't be better. My local homeless shelter is a Christian-run shelter. They had people out there, you know, between rounds of handing out supplies, they'd stop and do prayer circles. Just fantastic, wonderful, salt-of-the-earth people. And again, these are exactly the kind of people that we need on our side, and that we should want on our side.
So, was this? I mean, would you say that these are people who are accustomed to dealing with things like hurricanes, and have that sort of bred into them, as it were?
Oh no, no, not at all. My area is very inland. I don't think it's ever been hit by a hurricane before, and certainly not one this powerful.
So I took it for granted that they would have some experience of this, so it wasn't a big surprise to them.
Well, the thing is, again, as someone's brought up in the chat, America is a huge country, and different places will be affected by different kinds of natural disasters. Earthquakes are very common in California. They're very uncommon on the East Coast. Hurricanes are very common on the coastal areas of like Florida and the Carolinas. They're not at all common, because what happens with a hurricane is once it hits, it gains strength when it's over water. It loses strength when it's over land. So it's almost never strong at all when it gets as inland as we are. Usually it'll just be, you know, a couple days of rain or something. Nope. It was absolutely horrible. And, you know, we even had stuff like there were people who owned, because a lot of the roads were cut, which is why it took me so long to get around today. Some of them won't be rebuilt until late next year. Like I-40, as it goes from Tennessee in North Carolina, it's gone. They're not going to be able to fix that for a long time. We had people who owned their own helicopters coming up here because you couldn't get in any other way, and flying disaster supply missions into rural areas just on their own initiative. And by the way, one of the things that made people even angrier at the federal government was there were several instances where the government either told people they couldn't do things like that, or even in a couple of episodes, confiscated disaster supplies that people were bringing into the zone in a truck or something like that. And yeah, oh boy. Oh boy, do you not want to do that.
I heard about this kind of thing happening, and I wondered if it was fake news, if it was exaggerations or something.
Because, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. So it's interesting to hear it confirmed that this really was happening, because it sounds too bad to be true. Like, why would the government do this? Well, how stupid are they, or how malicious are they?
You know, there's sometimes when you just have to say, you know, we're just going to not look at the rule book today. Yeah, maybe what they were doing was technically not legal. For heaven's sake, in a situation like this, just let it go. Or even malevolence. You know, the story out of Florida where FEMA told its agents to not go to the houses that had Trump signs on them to tell them about the disaster relief they could get.
That is astonishing.
And that's the kind of, I'm sorry, but that's the kind of thing that's going to end really badly one of these days. You know, and let me make absolutely clear. I do not advocate violence of any kind against anyone ever. I say only that, in accordance with your local laws, defend yourself if you are attacked, but do not go causing any kind of physical violence or trouble anywhere. That's bad, 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 bad for you, bad for me, bad for the movement, bad for the country. Don't do it. However, this is the kind of situation that could easily lead to that.
And, yeah, it's going to really piss people off. I mean, that's just dreadful.
Yeah. You know, it's unconscionable.
I mean, so even there, see, this is interesting because there's obviously been a real polarization according to Dems versus Trump versus everyone else. Yeah, the support for Trump elsewhere in the country, but you seem to be saying that it even happened in Appalachia.
The government, okay, the local government and the Tennessee state government and the North Carolina state government were all actually pretty good. They were all okay. It's the feds. They were terrible and ineffective at best. You know, at worst, worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why a lot of people, you know, they trust their local government, they trust their state government, but they don't trust the feds. By the way, I'll tell you a little interesting story about my town. And I don't think I'm going to dox myself with this. It's too obscure a piece of local trivia. My town was actually in an area that leaned pro-Union during the Civil War. So they never got around to erecting a Confederate monument. They had vote after vote on it back in the 20s and 30s, and they never quite got enough votes for it to pass. Well, one day, everyone comes back from the weekend to the county courthouse, and there's a Confederate monument there that no one had ordered, that no one had paid for. Someone had apparently carved a Confederate monument, like in their barn, brought it into town in the middle of the night on a truck, used a little lever to put it on the front step of the courthouse, the front lawn of the courthouse, and left. So we're in a place where, and they had a vote to get rid of it. And they found while they couldn't get enough votes together to put up a Confederate monument, they also could not get enough votes to take one down if it was already there. So it's still there.
Right. Right.
That's the kind of thing you'll see around here, the do-it-yourself Confederate monument.
So that's good. But I'm wondering, is that the kind of thing that now that it's happened, they won't get rid of it, but they would never have done it off their own accord?
Again, remember, this is a part of the South that leaned very pro-Union during the war. It was a part of the South where the local economy just did not have a lot of slavery in it. Slavery was a cause of the Civil War. It wasn't the only cause of the Civil War, but it wasn't not a cause of the Civil War either. They did not agree with secession, and they wanted to stay with the North. And this is very much one of those places where all those stories you hear about the Civil War, about brother against brother, this was exactly the type of territory where that totally happened a lot.
That's quite amazing.
By the way, someone here had brought up the North being mostly Puritan and the South being not. Here's a little story about the English Civil War. And it shows you the difference in attitude between the two. Somewhere during the English Civil War, there was some need for a temporary truce between the two sides. So there was a meeting between a Roundhead commander and a Cavalier commander. So, you know, they worked out the details, and the Puritan, the Roundhead, just couldn't resist. And he looked at the Cavalier and said, you know, I know what goes on with your men. I've heard the stories about them drinking and whooping it up and going to the local whorehouse. You know, I know about all of that. And the Cavalier said to him, my men do that because they're men and they commit the sins of men. But your men are full of the spirit of pride and rebellion, and those are the sins of demons.
Right, okay. Would you say that this is still visible in the culture today?
There, it's among the big differences between North and South. Again, it's a completely different attitude. Different parts of Christianity have very different sort of life attitudes from each other. And that streak of Puritanism, that has turned into modern SJW. It's exactly the same thing, but with a different set of goals and with its religion displacer as leftism instead of Christianity. But the attitude behind it, the worldview behind it, it's exactly the same. And America has been plagued with this Massachusetts Puritanism since day one. You know,
I wonder if you could actually trace that ancestrally. Like, are people who are descended from that group, that sort of influx, are they more likely to have been SJWs in 2015 than people who weren't?
You know, it's a whole way of doing things. You know, we didn't get rid of show trials and witch burners. They're just expressing it differently. You know, someone had said there are certain parts of the world that for some reason just seem to produce troublemakers. Like he was talking about that sort of the section of Russia/Ukraine where the whole war is going on now has a long history of producing political troublemakers. And that whole Puritan Massachusetts, New England, same thing. Long history of producing troublemakers.
Right. Okay. To move on to another thing you wanted to talk about, and I think you talked about this last year, actually, the sad state of technology. You and I have definitely talked about this before. Might not have been last year.
Yeah. You know what? Technology sucks now. Everything's gotten worse. And I know, you know, I'm the old man yells at cloud. Okay, I get it. But really, it does. Like, you know, forums were a much, much better method of talking about ideas than anything that we have now. And now they're ghost towns. IRC, the same thing. You know, everything has ended up, you know, on Facebook, Twitter, you know, a handful of places online, most of which are not all that busy. You know, unless you're going to Instagram or TikTok or something like that. And what kind of, you know, I'm not on either of those because, like, sorry, there's no content that interests me there.
I can't imagine you being on TikTok. I don't think that would be your style at all.
Hit or miss. I bet you never miss, huh? Oh, did you hear about the whole thing with Hawk to a girl?
Yes, of course, of course.
How she came up with the scam coin? It's yeah. Like, I'm sorry, if you invested in Hawk to a coin, you have nobody to blame but yourself. Like... Who didn't see that come? Oh, and if you put money on the Paul Tyson fight, you're an even bigger idiot. You think there was any way that Paul was walking out of there a loser? He paid Mike Tyson $20 million, and Tyson knew exactly what that was for. I bet you that the conversation was, okay, I'll take a dive for $20 million. I just don't want to look like a bitch. So, okay, Tyson goes the distance, finishes the match and wins on points, and he goes home and rolls around in $100 bills. So, you know, just shameful display.
That's all a bit conspiratorial for me, I'm afraid.
Okay, where were we before I got off on that tangent about Hawk 2? Oh, the internet. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. One thing I will say is I like Substack. I like it as a blogging platform. I like its notes and all that. But here's the thing. Where is social media? Like, because nobody goes onto Twitter to socialize. Nobody you know, when do you social? No, it's not a social network. It's a broadcast network. It's, I go on there to get the word out about my Substack and to make snarky comments about this and that and the other thing. But there's no socialism. No social aspect of it, really. Where do you go to hang out with friends on the internet? Yeah, okay. Like I said, a couple of Discord servers I'm in that I really like. But gosh, you could make friends on forums. You'd get to know people. You'd converse with them. You'd send them DMs, all of that kind of thing. There's nothing like that now. The internet has become a very non-social place.
It's weird because that's obviously happened in MeetSpace, and everyone sort of retreated onto the internet. But now even the internet is becoming more, well, less social. It's like we're just generally becoming less social in every way.
The loneliness epidemic out there is just horrendous. And, you know, I was getting that way, too. Between COVID and having had my own health problems, I was kind of becoming a shut-in. I drank way too much at that period in my life. And yeah, the loneliness epidemic started to get to me, and I had to force myself to do things to make that different. You know, again, I found a local ham radio club and joined that. I started a local gamer group. We get together and, you know, play some tabletop, play some Jackbox, whatever it is we're into. And it's not the game. It's just to go be social. Go touch grass. Go get out with people. I found a local maker community. If any of you ever been to a maker fair or anything like that.
I have heard this, but I don't really know what it is. Can you explain this whole thing about maker communities and maker fair?
It's a lot of people who do kind of do-it-yourself stuff. There's a joke among makers, you know, why buy for $5 at Walmart what you can spend $100 and spend 6 months making yourself? People who screw around with Raspberry Pis and
all of those
kind of things. That is another aspect, by the way, of technology. Thank you for bringing that up. The Silicon Valley I first got introduced to when I moved to the Bay Area in 1994 was dominated by a bunch of people who I would call techno hippies. You know, the Steve Wozniak type.
Yeah.
And look, you know, you can have your disagreements with some of their political views, but again, they weren't crazy. They weren't SJWs. They were the kind of people who you could sit down at lunch with and be, yeah, well, Steve, you know, yeah, okay, I see that point. But, you know, over here, you know, you could actually talk with them, deal with them. They're all gone. They've all filtered out of the system. And the only place you ever will find someone like that is at one of the bigger maker fairs. Like the last one I went to in the Bay Area, which is absolutely huge, out at the San Mateo Fairgrounds. And if you get the chance to, you should go. Cliff Stoll was there. You know, he's a guy who wrote a book called The Cuckoo's Egg. He was an early computer scientist back in the 80s. And just by a string of luck, managed to bust a Soviet spy ring that was breaking into his computer systems. Which I think he worked for some big research university or something. Again, great example of a techno hippie. But, you know, either it's all corporatized, and a lot of East Indians have come into it. So it's either Satya Nadella or it's some loon like Tim Cook or something like that. Man, do I miss the techno hippies. Things were so much better then. And
I think that, you know, I watched a film recently. Hold on a minute. It was from the 90s, and it really, it probably is linked to what you're saying. Yeah, Empire Records.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that film?
It's been a long time.
I went into it with no real expectations. I expected it would be a bit of a nostalgia fest. And it was that, but it was also a really good film. It was actually a lot better, because if you read people's opinions about it online, it's quite polarized, and a lot of people say it's a shit film. It's no real storyline and all that. I really have to disagree. I thought it was actually a really good film and a nice film, and each of the characters is well drawn enough and has an arc, and everything was sort of neatly wrapped up by the end of it. And so it was lovely. But one of the things was this tone of the 90s, and in this sense it was a nostalgia fest, the sense of the 90s being very relaxed and laid back and open compared to, well, even the 2000s, but certainly the 2010s.
That's how I remember the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, it's a record store. I think it's not in California. I assumed it would be, but it wasn't. It was in I can't remember now, but it's a record, a large record store, independent, and they've got a staff room which is huge, and it's got a few sofas in it, and they just lounge around.
Now.
I don't know if it's realistic, if there ever was, like, even in 1995, was there a record store like this? Maybe not. Maybe it was a bit idealized even then.
I knew them. I went to them. Amoeba Records in Berkeley, Rasputin's. Yeah, they were like that.
Oh, we really have lost a lot, haven't we?
And again, you know, a record store in Berkeley, you're not exactly going to find much of the dissident right there. But, you know, again, none of this is personal. You know, as the great mobster said, it's nothing personal, just business. And someone says the 1990s was a decadent decade. Yeah, it was. And it was a whole lot of fun.
I'm not saying that the 90s was perfect. I'm just saying it was a lot better. It was a lot nicer than now. That's all I'm saying. I'm not.
Yeah.
Don't interpret that to mean that I think the 90s was perfect. I'm just saying it was better than now.
Yeah, you know, we look back on certain eras, and they were better. The 1950s were better. Were they perfect? No, they were better. You know, the Victorian era, was it better? It was a lot better. Was it perfect? No. I have a master's degree in literature. I wrote my thesis on Charles Dickens. I know a lot about the Victorian era. Trust me, there was a lot wrong with it. And you know what? When Friedrich Engels talks about the hideous poverty that he saw walking around early industrial era Manchester, that's not a lie. It was there. It was real, and it was horrible. You know, back in the day in the Whitechapel, there were whorehouses that specialized in underage girls. You could go right in and get a 12-year-old girl and go do your thing. There was a lot wrong with those times, but they were a lot better than now.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. It's obviously not total. And indeed there are elements of those times that we would now find horrifying, like the one you just described. But overall, of course it was a better culture. And of course, I mean, I don't need to go into it about Victorian England.
By the way, I'm going to bring it up. What they've done to Doctor Who.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Have you seen it? Have you seen this latest version?
No, I stopped watching after Matt Smith, but I've seen Nerdrotic and Geeks and Gamers and all that talk about it, and I know enough to know.
I mean, just goes from bad to worse, you know.
Okay, here's the thing. Much like James Bond, your favorite doctor is probably going to be the doctor that you grew up with. Oh, by the way, I got to meet Sylvester McCoy.
Oh, really? He I met him as well in 1990.
He came to a local science fiction convention. Lovely gent. Just everything you would want him to be. But generally, your favorite doctor is going to be your first doctor. Yeah. Just like your favorite Bond is going to be your first James Bond. So for me, James Bond is Roger Moore. I don't care how campy those movies are. I don't care how unrealistic they were. I don't care that probably on any kind of objective level, Daniel Craig is a lot better. And I like Daniel Craig.
Oh, come on. I thought you were going to say Sean Connery.
Oh, come on. Do I even have to say it?
Yeah, okay, okay.
But yeah, by the way, okay, so currently my favorite Bond film is Skyfall, but that display, that had to be really good because it displaced my previous favorite, You Only Live Twice, which is, I think in a lot of ways, the quintessential Bond film. It is everything that a Bond film ought to be. But yeah, you know, my doctor growing up was Tom Baker.
Yes.
As the doctor. And
that's a Cockney accent you're affecting. He certainly did not have a Cockney accent, but anyway, go on.
Yeah, well, you know what? My accent isn't that. My English accent is probably...
I'm just being a dick, don't worry.
Probably about as good as Millennial Woe's American accent would be. But
probably
where was I? You compare Tom Baker, or probably your doctor would be Sylvester McCoy, right?
Yes, yes.
You compare that to Shuti Gatwa. And
well,
and by the way,
both Scotsman. I mean, what's the difference?
No,
really?
Sorry, Shuti Gatwa is not a Scotsman. You didn't say that. I did. So. Okay. If the Bobbies want to come around to Southern Appalachia and try and arresting me for it, go right ahead. But yeah, no, you compare just not even the acting, just the character. Because look, I've seen a couple of Capaldi episodes. Capaldi's a great actor. He really is. And yeah, with the right writing, he would have been a great doctor. But the material they gave him was so bad.
I agree. It should have been really good. And I don't know if you read the essays I put out this year about it. I went through the decline. And yeah, I mean, don't worry, everyone. We're not going to talk about this for very long. It'll just be a brief digression. But yeah, Capaldi, I mean, I don't really like him, but he is a good actor. And he was suited for the role, so it should have been great. But that was that exact moment. His exactly when he started was exactly when they started to really ramp up the wokery, and it had always been there since 2005, but it really started ramping up then, and so it dominated his era. But then they did the woman. And
oh, Jodie.
And now it's Shuti Gatwa. And it's uberly gay, 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 gay. And it's fucking excruciating.
You know, and actually, I like Jodie as an actress. She was great in...
She was in Broadchurch, I know that.
Broadchurch, yeah. I liked her in Broadchurch. But she just... It's not...
She seemed totally miscast from what I haven't watched a single one of her episodes, but just looking at clips, this does not work. I mean, it's obvious she simply shouldn't be the doctor. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. And look, it's not that even per se, I object to the whole woman thing. Like the woman who played Missy.
I agree. That actually worked quite well. I agree.
You know what? You want to bring in a strong, powerful woman into Doctor Who? Bring back the Ranny.
I know. It was always there. They could have just done that. But no, they had to make the main character. They had to make the Doctor. They had to fuck that up. I mean, doing it with the Master, with turning him into Missy, as I wrote in my essay about this, I think it worked because it's not the main character and it's a villain. So it's not someone that the kids watching are going to be identifying with. Therefore, it's much less damaging. But when you make it, when you do it to the main character, you're fundamentally changing the show.
And you know, not only that, the writing for her was okay, and the actress who played her brought some real gravitas to the role.
Yeah,
you know, she was able to be the master. And I'll be honest, I liked her better than I liked John Sim in the role, and I love John Sim.
I still haven't seen his main turn in the role. I saw him when he returned twice. I saw both of those, but I never saw his original The Last of the Time Lords. And I've still not seen that.
Yeah, Shudi just can't bring the gravitas to it that the role needs. And the writing for him, okay. If you it's have absurd. The doctor,
it's totally absurd. I mean, you're right that he just doesn't have the gravitas. But then, more over and above that, the characterization is completely wrong.
Here's the thing:
he's a fucking gay twink.
Yeah. Look, if you ever have the doctor cry, it has to be over something big.
Yeah, like Sarah Jane dying or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly the example I was thinking of. You want to have him shed a quiet tear when he hears that Sarah Jane died. Okay, we're all there with that. Having him blubber like a 14-year-old girl at everything that comes along, that's not the doctor.
And this is a 60-year-old gay man's notion of being emotionally open and healthy and expressing mm-hmm. your emotions in a healthy manner.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. What an indictment of the age we live in.
And I feel bad for Shudi Gatwa. I don't actually,
because I know what you're going to say. He's been badly served by the scripts, sure. But I don't think he's a nice person. So I just think, fuck him. Which is probably the same thing Russell T. Davis thought, to be fair.
For example, you know who I feel bad for? I feel bad for John Boyega, who I've seen in a couple of British shows, and yeah, he's a good actor. I like him. But when he got the news, dude, you're going to be one of the leads in the new Star Wars, he had to be thinking, that's it. I've made it. I'm the next Harrison Ford. And he should have been. And the way they wrote his character is so shameful, so tokenistic. Because they cast him because he was black, and they didn't know what to do with his character. And they just turned him into comedy relief. And I understand why he's pissed off. I would be too. And, you know, it's no secret behind the scenes. He is as angry as you could be about this. And, yeah, I don't blame him one bit.
Well, that's a whole other thing that I don't know about Star Wars. But with Shuti Gatwa, I just think he's... I mean, maybe he is maybe he's a good actor in other things. I haven't seen him in anything else. But I thought, as Doctor Who, I thought it was just dreadful. Like, completely, totally unconvincing, no gravitas, completely the wrong persona, everything. And not to say nothing of the race.
Well, again, look, if they had, as had been rumored, cast Idris Elba as the Doctor,
it would have been less dreadful.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, okay, the whole race thing, but Elba has the gravitas for the role. He could do it right. You wouldn't find, you know, I don't think you would find him up there blubbering like a little girl.
Well, that's obviously the direction that Russell T. Davis wanted to take it in, regardless of the actor. I think the actor was chosen for that.
Yeah, and again, I just, you know, it's...
I mean, this is why I ended up writing so much text about it, 7 essays, 7 of them, because it's such an interesting thing about the sheer scale of this disaster, when it could have been so good, why instead was it so bad?
And it was so good. I mean, Eccleston was great. Tennant was great. Matt Smith was very good.
I think he was the best for the role. I think he was like Matt Smith. I think was the most suited to the character of all these actors, to be honest.
And by the way, Matt Smith in House of the Dragon, brilliant.
Yeah, I can believe it. I can believe it. I think he is a good actor. I mean, I think David Tennant's a good actor.
Uh huh.
These are all like Capaldi, Tennant, and Smith are all good, and Eccleston as well. Actually, are all very good actors. There's again, a lot you could say about all of this.
I don't hate Jodie. I just hated her doctor.
Well, I don't find her very likable. You know, she said bitchy things in interviews and stuff as well. So I just think.
Okay, let me correct that. I don't hate Jodie as an actress. I just hated her doctor.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I can't judge her as an actress. I haven't seen her in anything else. As I say, I've just seen clips from her era, and I thought, time and again, I thought, this is just shite.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad, bad, bad. To say nothing of it being a woman, I mean, it just doesn't work. This character is not supposed to be a woman. You could have an equivalent, but it's like some... I was going to say River Song, but I fucking hated her as well. The point is, you could have a sort of female adventuress character, but it shouldn't be the Doctor. And I don't think that Jodie Whittaker would be right for the role anyway.
Yeah, some of the best companions have been absolutely great. You know, I liked Amy a lot. I even liked Rose. I know.
I'll tell you what I do. I didn't like Rose particularly. She's, you know, chavvy and that awful multicultural London accent that she used for it. But I do like Billie Piper as a person. I've seen her in interviews, and I thought she seems like one of the few celebrities who's actually a really nice person.
Yeah. You know, you wouldn't have thought you could honestly say that Doctor Who started to go downhill when Billie Piper left, but... Yeah, it did.
I mean, in different ways. It was never, like, the revival was never for me. It was always, and I knew that even before it started. I thought, I'm not going to like this. It's going to be too different from the show that I loved as a wee child. So it was never really for me. But I have never watched it religiously. I've just watched this episode, that one. And so I've been able to chart its evolution, and I would say decline. I mean, I'll tell you what, I think the high point for this whole thing was the 50th anniversary special in 2013. I thought that was fucking great. Really great. And I said this in the essay. I thought, you've got to give Stephen Moffat due credit for this, because you know there are very legitimate criticisms to make of him. But nonetheless, that was a fucking notable achievement. It was a great script, a great idea. It had a moral core to it. All the right, great storyline. It was coherent, and all of this. That was the peak, and then immediately thereafter, this decline started. I think it's totally in the gutter at this. I mean, I can't really imagine how it could. But then I said the same with Jodie Whittaker, and then somehow Russell T. Davis managed to make it even worse. I mean, this is just appalling. The state of that program now is so bad. I would think anyone with more than sawdust between their ears at the BBC is just utterly embarrassed and ashamed of it.
Oh, by the way, I know I've asked you before, but let me ask you a question. Which do you think is worse for Britain? The BBC or the BBC?
Well, they're increasingly synonymous.
Yeah, aren't they, though?
Well, the BBC, there's got to be the British Broadcasting Corporation, because it facilitates mass immigration and so forth. So So I thought by the BBC, I thought you were referring to mass immigration of, you know, from Africa. So, yeah, the BBC, this is one of those difficult cases where it's something that should in theory be our strength is instead killing us.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be the state broadcaster was relatively independent from the government. It's not, you know, and so forth. It was well instituted at the beginning, had independence, all of that. And it wasn't commercial. It had a remit to inform and educate as well as entertain. So all of this, it started off well. And especially because it's free from commercial restraints, so it should be able to do things that are good, that are improving, not just trash. So all of this, it should be really good. Imagine a bunch of creative people in a huge building with all the technology, the equipment that they need to make drama. And they're free from commercial imperatives. I mean, it should be fantastic. And yet it's one of the main powerhouses of our decline in every way, culturally, socially, demographically, spiritually, everything. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I in terms of what to do with it, if things continue as they are, then the BBC should be abolished. If things are, you know, like if proper sane people get in charge of the country, then I would hope the BBC is retained, because then it could be a vehicle for our improvement as a people. But otherwise, I think it should be abolished, because it's just bad for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is so awful to see such a great institution come to that. You know, it's just, you know, here in America, back in the 80s, in the pre-cable age, so we have a public television system too. It's called PBS. But unlike the BBC, it is not virtually a monopoly. It's just kind of there, and people can go watch it if they want. And they used to play all kinds of amazing British television. I mean, everything from Fawlty Towers, even a comedy like As Time Goes By. They were where I first saw Red Dwarf, which, you know, talk about one of my favorite shows of all time. By the way, Red Dwarf 7, that's my favorite series. 6 is great. 7 is just peak Red Dwarf.
That's a very unusual opinion.
I know. A lot of people think 6 was the height.
No, I 5 was the
5,
height.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I like 5 and 6 are both brilliant. I just liked some of the little bit more serious storytelling in 7. It got a little bit more science fiction-y.
It was a comedy drama rather than a sitcom in that scene.
Yeah. And I personally liked it. But I understand if there were people who didn't. So, yeah, I just saw these great shows, just classics. And it's so sad to see that institution fall that far. Oh, by the way, there is a show, I think it was on BBC 3 or 4, back around 2005, 2006. It's a animated show for grown-ups called
Monkey Dust. Yeah, Monkey Dust. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I only ever saw one episode of that. Late at night in 2006 or something. And I remember liking it, but I never saw any more of it for some reason.
It's super depressing, but like literally everything that dissidents say about the state of Britain. Yeah, I'm surprised the showrunner got away with that even back then. And certainly they wouldn't put anything like that on the air now.
Yeah, I remember there were jokes about mass immigration and diversity. Like jokes as in black humor about it. And yeah, you certainly would yeah, I mean, it would be unthinkable that that would be made 10 years later.
Yeah. And, you know, that was the era of, like, all those Matt Berry comedies, IT Crowd, Dark Place, Man to Man with Dean Lerner, all of that. Oh, God, man, those almighty. Were great.
Can you believe it? As much time has passed since then as had then passed since the era of Blackadder and the Young Ones.
Oh, man. Oh, by the way, good for Rowan Atkinson with his stand up for free speech thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
He has really been on the forefront of that, and he deserves all the credit in the world out there for doing that. You know,
I agree.
Yeah. You know, there's a few people still on the stand up. He does Marcy. And then, of course, there is a strange case of J.K. Rowling, who agrees with the far left about literally 99% of everything. She disagrees with them about one thing, and they're out, you know, out for blood with her.
Well, I should say that I wrote an essay last year called "The Gender Criticals," and it was about her, not her specifically, although I think she was mentioned in it, but it's about that group of people who are like her, who are in her position, where it's basically leftists, and they're not even ex-left, they're still leftists, but they just disagree on this one issue and have been ostracized as a result of that, and and then consider themselves enlightened because they've been punished, you know, they've been through the fire, they've been kicked out of polite society, so that now they're rebels. They see themselves as rebels and trailblazers and all this, and really they understand nothing.
No, I agree.
It's just they don't even understand really why they were ostracized. They don't even understand the nature of the trans craze. They just think it's a sort of mistake. It's a weird mistake that happened.
I agree, no. But look, I have to give Joel Rowling some credit. She could have groveled and apologized, but she didn't. She stood her ground on this, and yeah, listen, I understand that she's the richest woman in Britain, and she can be like, you know, come at me, bro, but, you know, she has stood firm on it, and okay, you know what? I'll give her some credit for that. By the way,
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Did you hear about the new Harry Potter TV series?
I heard of it. I haven't heard anything about it.
The current, controversy is that apparently they're going
to... Yes, I did hear that the Alan Rickman character might be played by a black guy.
Snape. And not only is he black, but he's... From looking at him, he looks like about 30 years old. And again,
oh, for God's sake,
it's just can't bring. I mean, look, you could not possibly replace Alan Rickman in that role. I mean, just talk about a role where the actor and the role were just perfectly matched. But that said, you know, this dude I don't think he can bring that kind of gravitas to it. And, you know, it's just going to be another disaster like Rings of Power. You know, I don't know how House of the Dragon has managed to avoid that.
Well, it hasn't completely, though, has it? I mean, it's got the race mixing stuff in there.
Yeah, I know. But it's not super woke.
Yeah. Do you get the feeling that wokery, that thing... has peaked and is now on the way out, or do you think it's going to just continue? Because the thing is, this Harry Potter series, now would be the time that they're choosing the actors, so now would be the critical juncture at which they have to ensure that this thing has longevity, or conversely that it's laughed out of the room 2 years from now.
Okay, well, first thing, remaking Harry Potter at all is a dumb idea. Look, you know, you remake a movie when it's been a long time, things have changed. Like when Peter Jackson remade King Kong. Okay, the original King Kong was in 1939, I think, and 37 maybe, and Let's just say this.
The gaps are becoming smaller and smaller. I mean, didn't they remake Godzilla? Like that was in like 97 or something, and then they remade it recently. And then the Spider-Man things are like 10 years apart now. Less, maybe. The same with Batman. I mean, it's crazy now.
Although the new Godzilla movie, was it Godzilla Minus One? Apparently it's really good. So I don't mind that. But what is the reason to remake Harry Potter now? Like, the movies were very recent. The effects still hold up, and they were great. There's no reason to do this. But, well, here's the thing. Has it peaked? I think it's declining, but I wouldn't count it out yet. First, it's got a whole lot of fight left in it. And secondly, who knows when it will re-flare back up. So cautiously optimistic, yeah. But one of the things is these woke movies and TV shows keep flopping. And the thing is, look, Disney is a big, rich company. They can absorb a flop here and there. They can't absorb flop after flop after hideously expensive flop.
Well, look, I mean,
billion-dollar flop.
Yeah, I mean, look at this Snow White thing.
Oh, that's gonna crash and burn like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah,
I know. By the way, Doctor Who just got canceled. They're not bringing it back for another season.
Really?
Yeah, news just came down. What's that?
Has it been canceled?
Yeah, they're done.
Where was that announced?
Let me see if I can find it. I heard it, I think, from Nerdrotic, but let's see. Doctor Who canceled. Yeah, well, okay. And someone's saying it was, but I have heard that it, yeah. Russell T. Davies suggests, all right, hold on, let me...
Okay, I've found a Nerdrotic. I'll watch that. It's 6 minutes long.
Yeah.
As far as I know, it hasn't been cancelled. It's just they're waiting to see how this next year's season fares. But the thing is that this year's season was an absolute ratings disaster.
Oh, yeah. They can't keep that up.
Yeah, and there's no reason why next year's will be any better. So,
And, you know, again, we've just had, you know, it's just flop after flop. Disney can't do this forever. Hollywood can't do this forever. And yeah, I think they're going to start toning it back. Now, again, when I say toning it back, I mean, tone it back to where it was in like 2005. But get rid of the really egregious stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, people are so tired of girl boss Mary Sue. That's why War of the Rohirrim is going to flop. It's just where people just aren't interested.
I mean, it's contrary to human nature. Women don't want to be girl bosses. They want to be rescued by a male hero. And men don't want to be fucking pathetic. They want to be heroes.
It's just, you know what?
You can't keep contradicting that.
Even the somewhat girl bossish characters back in the day weren't annoying about it. Ellen Ripley wasn't annoying. Sarah Connor wasn't annoying.
No.
You know, they were strong women, maybe even a little bit unrealistically so, but not terribly. And remember, in Aliens, the most badass scene for Ripley in all of the Alien franchise, right? The Queen's there, she's going after Newt, and Ripley comes out in the power suit. You know, let go of her, you bitch. Like, even that was motivated by a feminine motive. It was motivated by the mother instinct.
Yes, yes.
You know, it wasn't just, you know, annoying McGirl boss for no reason.
I am a leader. You know, it wasn't that dreadful mentality that Snow White, Rachel Ziegler said, that she Snow White wants to become the leader that her father believed she could become. Oh. That is just sickening.
Yeah, it's...
Because fundamentally, again, I'm sorry to sound very sexist, but it's late at night now. So people just don't take this seriously. I mean, the idea of female leaders. And I know that there are good female leaders here and there, but it's clearly not. It's just not. It doesn't suit them. It doesn't work. It's silly. It's stupid.
Yeah, especially when there's no explanation whatsoever for it. You know, I understand, like, if you have Supergirl and she's a Kryptonian and all that, yeah, okay, she's going to be able to do a big, powerful punch and all that. And, okay, cool. But, like, why is Girl Boss suddenly, you know, why is Rey in Star Wars suddenly able to fly the Millennium Falcon better than Han Solo, out-duel a trained Dark Jedi, you know, the first time she ever picks up a lightsaber? People hate that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's like they're missing that part of the male psyche that means guys don't just want to be great at something by, like, magically like that. Guys want to earn it. They want to suffer and be tested and challenged and have to struggle and thereby win, you know, a high level of skill and proficiency and the respect of his peers and so on. Whereas the Mary Sue character never goes through that rite of passage because it's just not part of the female psyche to have that struggle.
I think if it was presented to them, in the right way, they would like it. I mean, contrast Rey to Ahsoka, as she was in the Clone Wars. Not necessarily as she is in the new series, but
I don't know what you're talking about. Is this Star Wars?
Yeah.
Right, I'm not familiar with this, I'm afraid, sorry.
Basically, you know, she starts out as the snippy, sarcastic teenage apprentice who's assigned to Anakin. But over the course of 5-7 seasons, you see her grow, you see her mature, you see her make mistakes and learn from them. So that when she ends that as a really badass Jedi, from that perspective at least, it's believable. Not just, again, she's instantly good at everything. By the way, the anti-wig wanted me to mention that Britain was really, really, really white in 1939. Yeah, I know. I know about the Windrush. I know what happened. So, yeah, I know. That's the Britain my grandmother described to me.
Yeah, it was that's a whole other thing, but yeah, the point is that you get these ridiculous Mary Sue characters. I'm not really sure exactly why this is, other than the explanation I've given, that the female writers of such characters just don't have this. They don't have that instinctual awareness that you've got to struggle in order to achieve greatness.
Yeah, but you know what? Even a good woman writer,
they want to be Helen of Troy. You know, they want to just be naturally beautiful. It's just given to them by nature. It's not something that they have to struggle for.
Even a good woman writer. Look, Hermione Granger is promising and smart, but she's not the most beautiful thing in the world as described in the books. And she struggles. She makes mistakes. And she learns from them. So, yeah, you know, that was a good female character written by a good female writer. But yeah, not this stuff.
I agree. But Luke, it's very late now.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get very tired.
That's all right. So,
let's end it there. This has been 2 hours. Sorry, go on.
Just one last thing. I may be co-hosting a new podcast that starts up before too long, which will be essentially movies as looked at from a dissident right perspective. Oh. And when we do that, I would love at certain points to have guests on to do certain films. And there are a couple of films I would really like to have you on for.
All right.
One of them being, of course, the quintessential Edinburgh movie Trainspotting, and Trainspotting 2.
Right. That'd be a good excuse for me to watch them again. I haven't seen the second one yet, but I haven't seen the first one for many, like since the 90s. So, yeah, I'd like to do that. What other films? Any others that you could mention?
Maybe one of the old comedies or something set in that was made in the 50s, 60s, 70s, like one of the Ealing comedies. Or there's a movie called Melody that was made in, I think, 1971.
Yeah, I remember you told me about that. I haven't seen it. So yes, yes, I'd be happy to do that.
All right. Well, fantastic.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, this has been a very, exactly as I expected, it's very all over the place sort of conversation, but this tends to be what happens. So that's great. That's fine. Let me just see who's on tomorrow. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing, apart from advertising that upcoming podcast?
Probably not. Who's on tomorrow?
Greg Johnson. John Waters.
Greg Johnson is a good one.
And then John Waters, and then New Right Post is a Substacker, and then Pox Populi, Angelo Plume. So that's for tomorrow night.
And I'm going to assume that's not the John Waters who directed Hairspray. Although that would be one heck of an interview.
No, it's not. It's not him. Sorry. I'm sorry to disappoint. You're not the only person who's asked me that. Someone else did. I had to disappoint him as well. No, I'm afraid not. It's John Waters, the Irish writer, commentator. Those four will be on tomorrow night. Hopefully the streams tomorrow night will run more smoothly. I'll have, be more in the swing of it by then. So they'll start on time. Hopefully. I'll do my best. But anyway, let's end it there. So, Auntie Dem, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial X.
Oh, wait, let me plug my stuff. So,
I've just said the closing line. You can't say any more now. I'm just joking. Go on, go on.
AnnoDominiNow.substack.com, AnnoDominiNow on Twitter/X.
Yes, they're both linked in the description to this video. So, okay. I hope this. I hope people check out your Substack and your Twitter. Okay, thank you very much for appearing.
It's my pleasure. I will be on your show any old time.
Okay, thank you. All right. Okay, I'll see you all tomorrow night. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The festival goes on, but how about giving something back to your tireless host? Sometimes the old ways are the best. To send Millennial Woes some special Yuletide cheer by post, you can use the P.O. Box. Address on screen now. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him to keep the lights on.